petitioners in Fort Bend County Drainage District and Fort Bend County versus, and you'll have to help me with this, Sabrush?
Spruce.
All right, good, I can do that, versus Spruce. We have allotted 20 minutes for each side to present argument in this cause.
May it please the court, Ms. Margaret Wilson will present argument for petitioner. She has reserved 5 minutes for us.
May it please the court. I'm Margaret Wilson. I represent Fort Bend County and Fort Bend County Drainage District, and we are pleased to be joined by our two AMICI, the Texas Association of Counties, and the Attorney General of the State of Texas. This is a case which arises out of an accident that Mr. Benny Cruz had when he drove his truck over a private bridge on private land in December of 1991. This bridge was built in around 1955 by the Drainage District when it was building its drainage canal through the previous landowner's land. It was along the banks of Fairchild Creek. There had been another bridge there, and what the district did was when it built its canal along that creek bank, it took out existing bridges and built new, bigger bridges as a quid pro quo for the easement granted by those landowners. There was an easement document executed which did not specifically address any kind of repair or upkeep of the bridges themselves, but did state that the district would repair all damage to roads, passageways, and fences that was caused by the district itself in its ingress and egress to the property. Thereafter, in following years, there were occasional repairs to those bridges by the district. And the evidence in this case was that in about March of 1981, a neighbor of this landowner who owned the road and the bridge pointed out to a bridge foreman for the district that one of the posts had rotted out under the bridge that had been built approximately 30 years before. And according to this witness for the plaintiff, Mr. Spruce, the bridge foreman, who was an unauthorized employee to make a promise, said, "We'll take care of it." The facts also revealed that this neighbor of the landowner contacted a superintendent who was the superior of this bridge foreman, making the same complaint, and the superintendent said, "Well, we'll look into it, check into it, and see what the bosses say about it." 9 months later, no repair had been made. Mr. Sabrush drove his truck over the bridge and it collapsed. This lawsuit resulted. The case was tried to a jury. The plaintiff recovered under a negligent submission, but the trial court, Charles Dickerson, granted judgment notwithstanding the verdict in favor of the county and the district based upon several arguments made in that motion, two of which are before this court today, the lack of a legal duty and sovereign immunity.
Let me ask you. You talked about the truck driving over the bridge. According to the CA opinion, the weight of the truck was approximately, I think, 19,000 pounds. And that would be an empty weight. According to the briefs, the truck weighed 13 tons, which would be 26,000 pounds. And on the day in question, the truck was loaded with ash, which it was transporting. Is that a correct figure that the loaded weight of the truck was 13 tons on the date of the accident?
I believe that that is correct because I got that from the testimony of the plaintiff himself who on the stand calculated the weight of his truck loaded that day.
I'd also like to ask you, what was the rated weight limit for the bridge?
5 tons.
So that would be 260% of the rated weight that was on that bridge that day?
Yes, Your Honor. The Court of Appeals reversed the trial court's judgment NOV and held that as a matter of law, the district and the county had assumed a duty to repair this bridge. Now, initially, this case was brought by the plaintiff against the county and the district because the plaintiff thought that it was a county bridge. Later he found out it was not a county bridge, and the theory of the case became that the county and or district had assumed a duty to make these repairs. Now it is undisputed before this court that it is a private bridge owned by a private landowner connecting two portions of the same person's land. The Court of Appeals said in its opinion, in reversing the trial court, said, quote, having assumed the duty to repair the bridge, the law imposed upon the county and district the duty to exercise reasonable care that another's person or property was not injured, unquote. In saying this, the Court of Appeals has decided that the county assumed a duty as a matter of law. Duty is a question of law. It has always been a question of law, and it is the threshold issue that must be decided in any negligence case before the case is submitted to the jury, or in this case, after the case is submitted to the jury. Judge Dickerson decided that there was no duty based upon the facts and the law in front of him, and therefore that the negligence charge submitted to the jury shouldn't have been. Now, the respondent argues that there are some factual components to the legal issue of duty. That may or may not be true in this case. Sometimes it is. Whether or not there are any disputed fact issues that bear on the legal call of duty in this case is irrelevant because no issues were submitted by the plaintiff, Bruce, now respondent, to resolve those fact issues. Such being the case, they are omitted findings and they are deemed findings in favor of the trial court's judgment under Rule 279, and the trial court's judgment was in favor of the defendant.
What is your response to the fact that in the motion for judgment NOV, the plaintiff in the trial court said that he was not relying on the district's past repairs to establish any duty to him?
Well, I am just about to get to that. My response to that is that that shows the only thing that he is relying on is a statement by the bridge foreman, Mr. Pete Hike or Head. It's spelled two different ways. And those words are, we'll take care of it. If he is not relying on any past repairs, and I can understand why he's not, because it always took a year or two after the request was made for anything to be done, and there was only a 9-month time span here between the request and the wreck. Therefore, they were performing completely consistently with the way they had in the past. So there's nothing unusual about what had happened. They are not basing the duty on the language of the easement, but only on the words of Mr. Hikes, who, as a matter of law, under Texas law, doesn't have the authority to bind a governmental entity to perform anything. He's a bridge foreman. In fact, his words were contradicted by his own superior, Mr. Sebesta, who was the proper person that could take such a request. He was contacted, and Sebesta said, we'll take a look at it. We'll see what the bosses want to do about it. And that's all he said. He made no promises.
Was that statement ever made directly to the plaintiff in the trial court?
No statement was made to the plaintiff. In fact, the statement by Mr. Hett or Mr. Sebesta was never communicated to the plaintiff or the landowner anywhere in the record. This conversation took place with Mr. Tiemann, a neighbor.
Is he the individual who had stopped using the bridge because it was unsafe?
Yes. He quit driving his cotton picker across the bridge, and it upset him, and he wanted the bridge to be repaired so that he could do that. Mr. Hike's testimony is very interesting. He says that he really didn't realize that a report was, I'm paraphrasing here, but he didn't really realize that a report was being made to him. He expected Mr. Tiemann to call the district office and make the report, and he says, we'll take care of it. Obviously, from his testimony, not realizing that that means that he is acting for the county, but merely saying, yes, I see what you mean, and expecting that a later report would be made, which, in fact, according to Mr. Tiemann, it was. And the assurance he received was no assurance at all. It was, we will look into it and see what the bosses will do about it. That was all that was ever said. And as a matter of law, the case law says, and I've cited it in my brief, an unauthorized employee, such as a bridge foreman, can't contractually bind or bind in any other way a governmental entity to perform any kind of act for anyone. So the two questions for this court to analyze on the Court of Appeals statement that a duty was assumed is, what we just talked about, what's that based on? The words of an unauthorized employee, which is contradicted by his superior. And, secondly, what is the duty they assumed? If a duty is assumed, which I'm fairly certain was not, is that a duty to repair immediately, to repair different from the repairs in the past? It was only 9 months later. They usually took a year or two to do it. What is the time period here? The next question is, a duty to whom? To any member of the traveling public driving this private road? To Benny Spruce, who never knew that any kind of request to repair was ever made? And duty to do what? To repair a bridge to hold almost three times the weight that it had been originally designed to hold in the first place? Now, plaintiff elicited some testimony in the trial court that sometimes heavier trucks drove across that bridge without incident, and I submit to this court that that was lucky and, in my opinion, not relevant to the case.
Does the record show that any kind of notice was given to any member of the public who might utilize that bridge of either the defect or weight limitations?
No, I don't believe there was ever any...
Any sign posted or dangerous bridge in bad repair, anything?
Okay. No, Your Honor, there was no sign posted, and in fact, that is a private bridge, and the county or district does not have authority to post it, and the Tort Claims Act exempts governmental units from liability for failure to post signs in the first place. So that has been addressed in the brief also. There was not a sign posted. And I would submit to this court that if there is a duty to post a sign, it's the duty of the landowner to post the sign, or this neighbor, if somehow he believes that he is the agent of the landowner, to post a sign that the bridge is unsafe. It is not something that the county or district is even authorized to do, and in fact, if they don't do it, they're shielded from liability under the Tort Claims Act.
What about the element of notice to the district or the county of the dangerous condition that exists?
Well,
their failure to respond to that in a timely fashion.
I'm sorry,
what's
I'm afraid
reasonable?
I don't... What is reasonable?
What's reasonable when the county has been advised of the defective condition and an unsafe condition, knowing that while that bridge may be on private property, it is used for public purposes. What's reasonable as far as their duty to maintain and repair and protect the public?
All right. That's a good question. That comes right back to what is the duty, because one cannot be held liable for doing something, even if it is deemed unreasonable, that is the same thing as negligence, if there is no duty in the first place to do it. And what you're talking about is posting a sign or giving notice. There is no duty to post a sign on a bridge that is not owned by the county or the district, and that the district does not have the duty to maintain. And in fact, it is the landowner's duty, or the neighbor, if for some reason he thinks that he is the agent of the landowner or something like that. I haven't heard that argument. I'm just thinking that if that's what he considers himself to be, it is their duty. And whether or not something is reasonable is not even a question that is reached if there is no duty in the first place, such as if someone is walking down the street and sees a person drowning in the water.
What is the Court of Appeals basis for finding that they'd assume that duty?
Your Honor, it is a mystery to me. I do not know what they based it on.
What does the record show about... Well, let me ask a very basic question first. Mr. Spruce was on this land as a licensee or with the permission of the absent. Why was he on the land first? And secondly, what does the record show about how this private road intersected with other roads in the surrounding area?
There is no evidence in the record as to how it intersected with it. However, there is some testimony that some people used it to get to their land because they didn't have any other way to drive heavy machinery across it. There were other ways, but this is the way to take heavy machinery across.
To other people's land.
To other people's land.
Which were also connected by private roads to this private road?
Yes.
Maybe best we know?
Yes. Mr. Sabruce was on the bridge to take some bottom ash to a friend's house who was the son-in-law of the landowner, but there is no evidence that he lived on the landowner's land or that the landowner himself actually knew that Mr. Sabruce was on his land. That is open in the record. I have looked for that and have not found it. He was going to see a relative of the landowner who lived on another tract of land.
Counsel, a couple of times you referred to the fact that it customarily took several months to get repairs made.
Yes.
After notice. What difference does that make if you maintain there is no duty anyway?
The only difference that makes, Your Honor, is that I believe it shows that they were acting in accordance with the way they had always acted in the past. And if, in fact, the duty is based upon past actions, they were consistent with their past actions. That is all.
But carry that one step further. Was this routine year-long delay common and historical in regard to notice where dangerous conditions existed, or was that in routine maintenance?
Let me explain this by saying that bridge repair was not something that was the number one object of the drainage district in the first place. That the drainage district had many other things that it had to do, regardless of the condition of the bridges. It had to attend to the function of the drainage canal itself over
was
and above.
Was bridge foreman the only person that worked on bridges, or were there several?
Oh, there were several people who did. And
safety was not a high priority?
Safety is certainly a high priority, but the function of the drainage canal was the number one priority, making sure the thing worked. And then, if they possibly could, they would get to the landowner's bridges and work on them when they could. Because that was something that was not an actual official function of the drainage district, was to repair those bridges. They did it to help out the landowner when they could do it, and when they had the time, the money, and the resources. And when they had the time, money, and the resources, they would go out and repair those bridges.
And if they did not have the money, whether they had the time or not, if they didn't have the money, then they had let the bridges just fall into any measure of inadequacy or disarray?
Your Honor, I suppose so. Like any other governmental agency, when it runs out of money, it can't do its work anymore. This was not something that was an official function of theirs. It is something they did when they could get to it. I have not even addressed the sovereign immunity question, and it says that my time has expired. How much time do I have left? 5 minutes for rebuttal. Let me just, for a couple of minutes, address the sovereign immunity issue. Your Honors, I believe that this case falls squarely under Section 101.056, which exempts governmental entities for liability from discretionary non-action, that is, not performing an act they're not required by law to perform, or not performing something that is a discretionary non-action, in other words, not making a decision. The Court of Appeals said, quote, appellant suit was based upon the negligence of the district in repairing or failing to repair the bridge once the decision to repair was made, unquote. I do not know where they get the idea that a decision to repair this bridge was made. The words of Pete Hike are the only thing you can base that on. And the words of Mr. Sebesta, his superior, contradict that and say, basically, we will check into it. There's no evidence in the record that any decision was made.
I want to be sure I heard you correctly in your opening remarks when I believe I understood you to say that when they went through and built or constructed this drainage ditch, or they took down some bridges, they put up new bridges, and they had commonly maintained these bridges since they erected them.
Occasionally they did, yes, when they could.
So they assumed sometimes responsibility for maintaining. When it was convenient, when it was not convenient, they did not assume that burden or responsibility. But people who might utilize these bridges didn't know when to allow them and when not to allow them. Is that right?
mean, either they take responsibility for them or they don't. They tore down the old ones, they put up new ones. They had, as a matter of convenience or for whatever reason, assumed the burden and responsibility for maintaining it. I mean, that's what I heard you say, I thought, in the opening, and now you're saying, well, they assumed the duty, but it wasn't convenient, so they can't be bound by it.
Well, I hate to use the word convenient. Convenient a little bit understates it. They repaired them from time to time. They did not assume a duty to repair them from time to time, but they did it when they could and when they had the time and the resources to do it. Even Mr. Spruce says that he does not base his case of assumed duty on past repairs. That is in the transcript and in his response to our motion for judgment NOV. He says he doesn't base it on the past repairs, but on the words of Mr. Hyatt, who said, we'll take care of it.
Did the adjacent landowner ever make any repairs on his own? Did they ever?
Yes, people do make repairs on their own.
I'm talking about in this case.
In this case?
Is there evidence that the landowner had on occasion gone in there and made repairs?
I can't answer that question. I do not know.
Any other questions?
Have not been able to address the sovereign immunity issue.
Well, you have about 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Hyatt.
Thank you. May it please the Court, Mr. Robert Gaddis, to present argument for the response.
Your Honors, I'm Bob Gaddis representing Benny Spruce here. He is a respondent in this cause. I'd like to start off by backtracking a little bit and giving you what we see as the facts without belaboring the facts. If we go back to 1955, the early 50s, when the statute, which is cited in the briefs, authorized the drainage district to do whatever is necessary to create a smooth drainage system in Fort Bend County. They took it upon themselves to go out and look for land to put these canals through and to widen. One of many of these landowners was Mrs. Worstifer, a German woman, who was approached by them and said, look, put the bridge in here. If you have any problems, call us and we'll come out and do it. This is kind of like HLM, the light company, or any utility. When you have a problem, you call us and we'll be here. Now, let me get into the record. I've been attacked a couple of times for allegedly misquoting the record, and I want to get the record straight. Going to Mr. Yes, Your Honor, there was an easement.
Did that easement maintain any reference to repairs?
There's a lot of reference to a lot of things, but the specific...
But there's no commitment to repair in the easement?
Doesn't say the bridge per se, but it has a lot of verbiage which is broad in nature. But I think that this has been admitted to by their chief witness already, so if I could give that part of the passage. Okay. Mr. Stanley Kacherka was offered... as their key witness. He is 37 years, general manager, and a civil engineer who ran the entire drainage district and quit recently before the trial and went to work for an engineering firm whose key client is the county. Mr. Kacherka on page 213 states as follows, my question, I understand that, but did you not testify that you felt that like you were doing these landowners a favor? Answer, in return for them giving an easement. Okay, so you agree? This is the question. So you agree that it was in turn for them granting an easement that you agreed to fix the bridges? Do you not? Answer, if we refixed the bridges, yes. Question, I understand that, but in those cases where you did agree, it was in turn for that easement that you got, right? Answer, as part of our operation procedure, yes.
Is that an agreement to repair in writing?
No. Stopping on line 24 of page 213, going to line 23, page 214, question. Did you not testify just now that the reason that you granted these type of favors is because you wanted to give this in turn for the people giving the easement? Is that your testimony? Is? Answer, yes.
Counsel, on page 2 of the CA opinion, it says the easement was silent as to the obligation of the district to repair the bridge. Is that incorrect?
Whether it states in the opinion, I'm sure that's correct. I'm sure that's what they said. I don't have it in front of me, though.
Okay. But you're saying that is factually incorrect.
I'm sorry?
Are you saying that is factually incorrect, that there was an agreement to repair the bridge?
Oral.
Is it true that in your response to the motion for NOV, you stated that you are not relying upon the district's past repairs to establish NOV?
Let me address that. I did say that, and here's why I said that. It was asserted by the opposing counsel, without any regard to the conversations by Mr. Elton Tiemann and these people at the county, that my whole position was because they had repaired them in the past, they had a duty to repair them on this occasion. And my contention was not that at all. My contention was you couple the prior occasions together with the communication that we got a problem out here. It is that communication. There is no duty until they're apprised there's a problem. But once they're apprised there's a problem, they're supposed to do something about it. And my position was is that it's not those prior acts in and of themselves. Maybe I should have reworded that and said not in and of themselves, but it is that communication by Mr. Tiemann to their bridge foreman and their bridge superintendent. It was that communication that perfected that duty.
What does record show as far as your client's first knowledge of that communication between the bridge foreman and Mr. Tiemann?
There was never, ever, my client never was aware of that.
So and he learned about it during the course of discovery?
That is correct. That is correct.
So he's, but you say he's entitled to rely on that, it, even though he never knew of it?
That is correct. Otis engineering case addresses that point specifically, Your Honor. What they said in Otis was is that we had a case where a man had been drinking on the job, and they took control, and they voluntarily decided to put this man in a car and send him home. And this man had a wreck with another car, killing the people, you might recall, and the people brought a suit based on assumed duty.
What is the affirmative duty here, the affirmative act that you can point to that brings this within Otis?
That brings it within what?
Otis Engineering.
Because the affirmative act is this. Is the notice they said there's to be an affirmative course of action.
Yeah.
Okay, the affirmative course of action is for 37 years, they had rebuilt this same bridge, worked on the same bridge, repaired the same bridge, and told everyone, we're going to do this, just call us. Then on notice, after taking that affirmative course of action, and taking $200,000 in budgeted line item from the taxpayers, having done that and established that was the reason they want to use that money for private bridges, after having done that, they then didn't do that.
Counsel, you refer to Otis, but Otis involved an action, sending a drunk employee home in his own car, and that was more than a mere promise. And you also relied on Colonial, which was misrepresentation of a past fact. And my question to you is, does a mere promise to act in the future constitute an affirmative course of action that results in liability? And if so, what cases can you cite me that say that?
A mere promise
to act in the future constitute an affirmative course of action. And what cases can you cite?
Okay. Your Honor, I would cite to you two cases. And I'm trying to think of the way you define this to make sure they fit. I want to say the Van Page case, Denton versus Page. And I'll tell you why I say that, because the assertion there was is that this fire marshal had been out to see, I don't know if you recall, but what happened was there was a fire, and this fire marshal for the city had come out to see, and the assertion was he didn't do his job, okay? Now, the court in that case said that if you have an implied agreement, then in this case we don't have an implied agreement. So, therefore, we cannot find that. But an implied agreement, if you read the reverse of that, and you read the concurring opinion by Mr. Kilgarland, Justice Kilgarland, I believe the two do say that if you have a situation where you have a promise, especially in a situation like this, we have prior conduct in the same bridge, but if you have a promise, I contend that that is an assumption of duty, which assumed duty is a duty under the law.
What time frame did Mr. Tiemann agree for the Fort Bend County Drainage District to act? In other words, if the accident happened the day after the statement, would there still be a duty here?
There would be a duty, but I would say that he had not had an opportunity to execute on it.
So time is a factor.
Reasonable time.
Was reasonable time determined in this case by anybody, fact finder, judge?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, let's put it this way. The jury felt like while they put 40% contribution on my client, they did say for 60% of the reason the negligence was on the part of the county. And by that definition of negligence and proximate causation, that includes, I think, what you're referring
this
to.
This broad form submission. Whose negligence, if any, do you find?
That is correct.
So there was no specific inquiry of any fact finder as to the reasonable time to react to the promise you're saying?
Not specifically, no, Your Honor.
Counsel. One day wouldn't be enough time to act. Would have been enough time to act?
Your Honor, under these circumstances where you've got a rotten bridge and they're apprised of it with the pocket knife flaking off and all the things it went through to show them that it was rotten, I would say immediately. I would say, first of all, post a sign immediately. I mean, get the trucks out there, whatever, you know. Maybe it's 2 days. Maybe it's a day and a half. But I can say one thing. I know that 9 months certainly is unreasonable.
Counsel, what is your response to the restatement second of TART, section 324A, the caveat that's contained in that that says that it expresses no opinion as to whether or not the making of a gratuitous promise is a sufficient undertaking to result in liability?
Just that. They are not saying, in their writing of it, they're not saying that they're going to take a position either way.
Before your time's up, would you address also the sovereign immunity issue?
Yes. Thank you.
Talk to us on your phone.
Okay. I'd like to hold up to you two cases, State versus Terrell and Brazos County, Norton versus Brazos County. State versus Terrell, pretty much, while it does start out on what they call subsection 14.9, 14.9, it also says 14.7 means the same thing. So given that is, we had a case where a police officer there's a policy of putting apparently flashing lights and sirens on when you go out to chase a speeder. He didn't do it. So they said, let's go ahead and let's look at this thing. What are we talking about here about discretionary? And they go into, if I can state their words precisely, at page 788, thus if the negligent causing an injury lies in the formulation of the policy, and I accentuate the word policy, i.e. the determining of the method of police protection to provide the government, remains immune from liability, period. However, if an officer or employee acts negligently in the carrying out of that, carrying out that policy, governmental liability may exist under the Act. And it, that's exactly what we have here. There's a policy to repair the bridges, privately owned, collect $200,000 a year from public, and go repair the bridges.
Within what time?
Reasonable time, under circumstances. If they want a new paint job, I would say they can wait a year. Okay? But if you've got a condition that's going to kill a motorist, I think you have a duty to. Foreseeability is, I think, as this court has pointed out in the Mitchell case, foreseeability is the one single thing that I think that you look for in determining duty. If it's foreseeable that you're going to have somebody die from circumstances, you're supposed to act. That reasonable time frame gets way down there.
Could the landowner have sued the district to force them to repair the bridge?
That's a good question. It's a real good question. If I understand what you're asking me, do they have a contractual obligation so binding that they would have been able to litigate the issue of repairing the bridge and when?
Well, I mean it more generally. The way I asked, could they prevail in a lawsuit to compel the district to fix the bridge? Could the landowner prevail?
I say yes.
On what theory?
Based on the fact that they had the, over the years, the prior conduct together with the verbal representations.
What prior conduct?
Well, they repaired this bridge.
Other bridges?
No, this bridge here. They've been repaired many times.
But again, we come back to the question of duty. Now, in looking at the record, it appears that the county used 5 criteria to determine whether or not they were even going to work on a bridge. One, they review them on a case-by-case basis. Two, it depended on whether or not they had county funds, and if they ran out of the $200,000, they didn't repair. Three, did they have personnel? Four, did they have equipment? And that it was purely a discretionary matter, that sometimes they did and sometimes they didn't. Is that correct?
What you're saying in the record is correct, but the evidence and what the jury found was that the person who said that, credibility was lacking. And let me tell you why, Judge. And the county goes out there immediately after it goes down, and they spend $7,800 not only clearing the drainage canal to clean it out for $1,800, another $6,000 of taxpayers' money that they say that they didn't have the money to spend. So the jury
was if you ask me to look at your car and see if I can fix it, and I look at it and I fix it, and then you ask me next week to look at your car and see if I can fix it again, and I say I will, and I don't do it, you can sue me for not doing it.
If my car creates an unreasonable risk of harm of such a magnitude as you should have foreseen,
and if you run into somebody because I didn't go out there and fix your car when I said I would for free, even though we didn't have a contract or even an understanding and I wasn't going to get anything from it, just like I didn't get anything from it this week, I'm responsible for whatever happens.
Well, now when you say you didn't get anything from it, are we paralleling to this case here?
Yes.
Okay. The thing from it was the fact that I believe the record will establish that this, they didn't go out and write checks out for this land. They took the easement, and my contention is, as Mr. Pachurka testified to, is that orally they said, don't worry about it, we got you covered, trust me.
Well, now wait a minute. What you read on pages 213 and 224 wasn't that. I didn't hear any express oral representation.
First of all, would you also address the argument that the individual you're talking about had or did not have authority to bind the county?
Well, okay. Somebody else.
We're talking about the engineer.
Yeah, we're talking about the retired engineer here. But his testimony was, as I understood it was, is that the repairing was a goodwill type of gesture, which made it more likely that they would get landowners to agree to give these. Did I miss something? I mean, was there some representation back in 1950s or whenever this easement was granted?
His testimony on page 214, line 23, goes as follows. Question, did you not testify just now that the reason that you granted these type of favors, and for the benefit, he had formerly referred to these as favors, what he was doing for these people, is because you wanted to give this in turn for people giving the easements. Is that what your testimony is? Answer, yes. It was an oral inducement.
Is there any testimony about what this landlord or their predecessors, or any landlord, was actually told at the time one of these?
Yes, we do have testimony. Now, it's the understanding of the current landowner. He received it based on these understandings, and that's what the testimony is.
Was he the landowner at the time of the easement?
No.
Where is that testimony in there?
Okay. Mr. Egger, page 155 it starts.
Okay. I can read it. I just didn't know.
Okay. Starts at 155 and ends at 160. Ends on line 6.
So your position is that at the time... This particular easement led to this particular bridge was granted prior to that time, and since that time, though there's been nothing about bridge repair in the easement itself, in the written documents for the easement, it was widely understood and common practice out there that the county assumed that responsibility, and they had money in the budget allocated, I guess, every year to take care of that sort of thing.
Yes.
Does the easement have recite any consideration in it? $10 another day?
Well, it says $10 and it's no significant. It's either none or dollar or I'd have to pull it out and check that.
Does the record reflect that they have a budget item for repair of these bridges?
That is correct. It's a line item budget, and I've got the copy of Mr. Jalloway's testimony. If I have time, I can read that to you or give it to Saeed, either one.
Well, and you also said that, as a matter of fact, immediately after the accident, they spent $7,000
exactly.
making the necessary repairs.
Exactly. Which, Judge, on its face is virtually an admission that, number one, they had the money, so that business about the money just came up at trial, and number two, they felt an obligation to put a new bridge up and to repair the bridge.
And then your argument is that they have this obligation in perpetuity. At the end of time, the county has an obligation to repair this bridge because of the fact that they've acted, even though you stated in the trial court you didn't rely on their power of practice. You're saying here, well, that's not, maybe you overstated that, but at any rate, they'll have, the county has in perpetuity an obligation to keep this bridge in good repair.
Yes.
This is, your argument essentially is, I want to try to simplify it as much as I can for my own simple
sure.
mind. You're arguing that as a part of the consideration for the easement, when the county and the district came in, and had earlier torn down some existing bridges. They replaced those bridges, they built new bridges, and that they would maintain those bridges as part of the consideration for the easement.
Yes.
It would also follow, I think, that in order to maintain the adequacy, efficiency of the drainage system, that they would want to keep debris out of the drainage system. And if they fail to keep the bridges in good repair, that would contribute to debris, which may also be one of the reasons they moved so fast after the bridge collapsed, because
right.
it created debris and obstructions within the drainage system itself.
That is correct, Your Honor. And not only did they remove the debris for a charge of approximately $1,800, but they then ordered out and got brand new supplies to rebuild the entire thing back intact. And I'm sorry?
Well, I'm just, the budget item interests me because it's hard to understand if they had no duty to repair and they were only going to do it as a matter of convenience, why they had a budget item for repair.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, I have one question.
Sure.
Is this not a quote from the contract between the plaintiff and the defendant that they were obligated to repair all damage to passageways resulting from the district's use in going to and from the easement, resulting from their use of the bridge. That was their sole obligation.
That is not their sole obligation, Your Honor. It's our position that that is what is in the easement.
That's the contract they signed.
But no, nobody signed that. I mean, we didn't, I don't believe you'll find a drainage, I don't believe there's any. Signature-wise, there's no, that is not a performance contract. I don't think Mrs. Worstifer's, I'm sorry, would be given over to, from Ms. Worstifer to them, and they didn't sign it.
But the landowner did sign this easement agreement.
Right, that's my recollection.
Any other questions?
If the county wants to avoid the duty in perpetuity, can they surrender the easement?
Your Honor, I would say that would be one way to handle that matter. They could do that, or I guess they could restructure, just get with the landowner and say, we're, you know, we're not going to do this anymore. Let's rework it or something.
Your position is as long as they're benefiting from the easement, they have this duty.
Yes.
And if there are, you made reference to looking in the record for something, I suppose if there are any of these questions that you have not already addressed in your brief by citation to the record, you can forward promptly a letter brief drawing our attention to those sections.
That's in my notes here today?
Yes. If you've got, if in response to some of these questions, we've kind of gotten machine gun fire that you have not addressed in your brief, I wish you would reference those parts of this, statement of facts.
Okay.
Promptly.
Sure would.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor, for your time today.
Court is ready to hear a few rebuttal sentences from the petitioner.
May it please the Court, I urge you to read the rest of Mr. Kucherko's testimony because I think it's been somewhat misrepresented, and I guarantee you he never said anything like, trust me.
Why isn't the question of his authority by the district?
I'm sorry?
Why isn't the issue of his authority to bind the district of more importance in your argument?
Whose authority?
Either the witness or any other person acting on behalf of the district.
It is very important in my argument that Mr. Hike, who said we'll take care of it, has no authority to bind the district, and case law says that he can't.
Doesn't that apply to the witness also?
Yes, it applies to the witness also, but all the witness was doing was explaining the standard procedure. And I do agree that the witness cannot bind the district as to his understanding of why they're out there performing these repairs. Absolutely correct.
Is there any question that the district received notice of that dangerous condition? Is there any question that they received notice of the dangerous condition?
Yes, there is a question that they received notice. Mr. Hike says that he does not remember being taken under the bridge and being shown the post, merely being told that some posts were rotten and they needed repair. There, as I recall, Mr. Sylvester was not notified that there was a dangerous condition, only that there is repair. But, Your Honor, I would urge you to read the record on that because I'm telling you what my best recollection is, and I don't want to misrepresent to the court. That's what I believe is in the record. This $200,000 line item, I want to emphasize, has been consistently misrepresented by Sabrouche. It is to cover about 10 different things that the district is supposed to do. And I have listed those things in my report. At one point, Jalloway answered a question and said, yeah, that's for bridges. He later explained it's for low water fascines, it's for water gates, it's for these installations, it's for a million things. And if we got something left over, we will work on the bridges. Now, as far as rebuilding this bridge, the district had to clean it out to get the canal running again. Why would they want to build a new bridge? Maybe to prevent the landowner from coming out there and trying to build his own bridge and gumming up the works and building something substandard that's going to fall in that nobody can drive over. So that is not evidence of some sort of agreement or obligation.
Any other questions?
Secondly, it was a new year, new budget.
I think your 2 minutes are up even without.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument and the second cause. The court will now take its another brief recess.